Yeah, well, Soto wasn't the only reason why the Mets lost this series to the Yankees, Chelsea. It was bad defense, as everybody's been mentioning. Francisco Lindor had himself an awful series. But back to Soto, because to me, it wasn't about the result of the series. This was about the breakout, the coming out party for Juan Soto. I thought that this series, the booing, would be motivation to wake Juan Soto up. And what Carlos Mendoza said after the game was true about Soto, saying that, well, nothing changed. He didn't react to the boos one way or another. Yeah, and that's the problem. Nothing changed. I thought it was going to change for the better, that Juan Soto would wake up and be himself, and he's not. And that makes me think that just something is off. It's not concern about Juan Soto's talent or his health or anything like that. You know he's got the talent. You know he's got the right attitude and all that. He just doesn't look comfortable. He hasn't looked comfortable. He hasn't looked like himself. I know what Juan Soto looks like. That's why I wanted the Mets to go out there and get him. I love Juan Soto. What we've seen so far with the Mets is not the real Juan Soto. I thought it was going to come out this weekend. He didn't. And I'm concerned that maybe he's just uncomfortable. And who knows when that's going to change.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Monday, May 19th, 2025. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at TalkingMetsNoG, add in your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com, no G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You get me on Instagram, Talking Mets No G, and don't forget the newsletter, substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks on the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Welcome to another edition of the Talking Mets Podcast here on this early Monday morning post-Subway Series. Mets lose 8-2 in the Sunday Night Baseball finale of the Sunday Series. The Yankees take the first round of the Subway Series 2-1. On to Boston, on to Fenway Park, and I figured I'd come to you and kind of wrap up the series on a weekend that, as a Mets fan, was very disappointing, but I think there's a few learnings, as there always is, that comes out of the Subway Series, and I figured I'd give you a little State of the Union here. Our usual show got broken up, did a little bit on Friday morning, did a little bit today, so in the end, we got to where we have to get. Just a little bit different with a little bit of beyond the mic in the middle. So let me start here with this. You know, the Mets have to understand, and there's nothing wrong with you treating the Subway Series like any other three-game set, because in the end, that's what it is. And I think you saw a couple of teams over the weekend look at this series differently. And it was almost like a reversal of historically what the Subway Series has been about. We talked about the series in the past. There was a ton of juice. It was a warm-up for possibly practicing for October. In many ways, it was more of a warm-up for the Mets than the Yankees, who had, especially in the 90s, going into the turn of the century, had many, many rounds of real postseason experience under their belt that they didn't need the regular season exercise of the Subway Series, especially with the pressure of George Steinbrenner and the media, you know, scrum and all the things that Joe Torre knows over the course of 162 games that become peripheral enemies, become peripheral distractions. And in a lot of ways, the Yankees used to treat it as an annoyance, and they would lose sometimes 2 out of 3, and it was a big deal for the Mets, and it was celebratory for the Mets fans, and for the Yankees, like, look, it is what it is, we move on. You know, maybe Steinbrenner would get upset. And, you know, by August, September, it'd be a long and distant memory because the Yankees be on to the postseason. And sometimes the Mets were having a great season and sometimes, you know, they were not. And even on times when the Mets have been on the other end of the curve, you know, the Subway Series is always a big deal for them. And after last year, after some of the things that transpired in October, and I know the Yankees went to the World Series, and I think in a lot of ways the Yankees' run was more improbable than the Mets' run because, you know, the Mets came over the Phillies and what happened in Milwaukee and what have you. But, you know, the Yankees had a little bit of an easier run to the World Series. I don't think it had the same feel. I shouldn't say improbable. It didn't have the same feel of what the Mets did. It felt like the Mets kind of accomplished something big and took a step forward as an organization. And for the Yankees, it was like, well, you kind of went through a field that, you know, wasn't really all that good. And then when they played one of the big boy teams that the Mets lost to, I mean, the Dodgers pretty much put them to sleep. And then the whole Juan Soto situation happens this offseason. And let's make it clear. And Soto has to understand this. And I think you're seeing now, 6 weeks, almost 2 months into his tenure, the amount of scrutiny he's gotten for his decision, the amount of focus, the amount of pressure he's under, I think is a lot more than what he expected. And in the long run, I can't see an athlete who has the resume on the offensive side of Juan Soto succumbing to all this. And he can't because he's going to be here 15 years and at some point things will normalize. But I don't think he understood what he did when he made the decision going from the Yankees to the Mets. I don't think the Mets as an organization, or maybe the players, I shouldn't say organization, understand that when they broke the yoke and what they did last postseason and what Cohen has done to elevate them into the pantheon of the sport and ripping apart and shedding the old amazing and believe and LOL Mets and a team that's, you know, Charlie Brown with the football, all the things that he's worked at over the last 5 years to pull away. I don't know if they realized that when they got into this next phase, that they were not necessarily going to be accepted at the table by everybody. And in a lot of ways, I think a lot of people are taking it as an affront that how dare the Mets put themselves in the pantheon with the Yankees and the Red Sox and the Dodgers. You know, this is a party that you weren't invited to. You know, it's like the old new money, old money. No, the Mets are new money. The Mets are new money, and sometimes old money doesn't like new money in their circle. So going into the weekend, I don't think the Mets were ready, and that's something that, you know, maybe is a talk radio narrative that I'm giving you, for what turned out to be a really big series for the Yankees fans. And I don't know if the Mets brought the same sense of urgency and the same intensity that you normally would reserve for the postseason to these three games. Now, I don't think that this is going to be an issue. I'm not making this into an issue. I think the Mets treated this as three road games. And if you want to just do the analysis of the team, I'm going to give that to you, the good, the bad, and the ugly, because there are some things as we get to the end of this getting to know you stage that are now standing out as concerns and things that could potentially derail the organization, the team, in 2025. But the real thing is, I think the Mets have to take away in the learning from this weekend is the national media doesn't want you at this table. The rest of the league doesn't want you at this table. You are now, in some cases, the hunted. When you go into an opposing team's ballpark, especially when you go into Yankee Stadium, Atlanta, Philadelphia, where they haven't been yet, the big teams, the teams that really don't like you, the teams that have taken joy in your pain, you have to be ready for that to be, in some cases, that fan base's World Series. Beating you, sending you home, seeing you have an awful weekend is going to give them a lot of joy. And it might be, in some cities, the only real fun they're going to have all summer. So in a lot of ways, the Mets have to raise the bar on themselves. And they didn't do that this weekend. And maybe that's a learning they have to as they develop on the 2025 squad. When they came back from being double digits under 500 and had that fun summer last year and made it into the playoffs, and really that season of 2024 encapsulated all the amazing and believe and everything that's the foundation of this franchise from 1962 on in basically a six-month span. And it was a lot of fun. And like I said, that's in the closet, and very rarely when you have that innocent climb are you going to have that replicated. Now you're trying to take this thing to the next level and be a consistent, contending, winning ball club like the Dodgers, like the Yankees have been, Cardinals have had their stretches. Phillies have, you know, had their runs and what have you. And sometimes, you know, that's a different way of being viewed, and you have to view that within the clubhouse differently. Bad pitching did the Mets in. McGill took them out of the game on Friday. They won a classic ball game on Saturday. A classic ball game. That's a classic Subway Series game. And then yesterday, a throwing error and a Yankee Stadium home run beat them. It's not like they were annihilated. They beat themselves on Friday. And let's face it, Friday, it was all about the Knicks. So they could hide on Friday. The Mets are able to hide on Friday. Okay? Saturday, all the focus post-Knicks game. Saturday afternoon, beautiful Saturday afternoon. A mano-a-mano. We wrote about it over at Beyond the Mic. Diaz versus Judge. That should go down as one of the right up there with some of the best Subway Series moments on either side. Your best reliever against a modern-day Mickey Mantle. And then Sunday was another great ball game. Some frustrated BABIP moments. Some good defense. Really good pitching on both sides for about seven innings. And then things fall apart because of sloppy play. At the end of the day, it's a lot of little things. But I think that putting all the baseball aside, because really what's a shame about the weekend is that the media made it more about goofy fans that for the first time in many of their lives, especially, you know, Yankee fans that are probably, you know, 45 years old or under, they have, maybe not that old, but maybe, you know, 40 and under, 35 and under, they didn't get the player that they wanted. It was always rubber stamped that if a player wanted to be with the Yankees, or the Yankees wanted the player's going to the Yankees. Didn't matter who they were. From 1990, you know, five-ish on. And now Soto disrupted the balance of power in some cases. You know, the logic that was put to this sport. The media's thrown off about it. They want to cover it. And let's face it, when you get a lot of money, when sports in life, whether it's sports or politics or entertainment, whatever, it's a pretty simple formula. It's been like this since the beginning of time. This is not new to the social media era. You have a nobody that's a great story that makes it usually out of nowhere, puts a lot of hard work to put themselves on a national map. They become extremely successful. And once they get rewarded at a high level, pretty much, at least for a period, everyone tries to tear you down or find reasons why you're not deserving of such reward. And that's what's happening with Soto. A-Rod experience. I mean, the perfect guy to talk about what he's going to be going through pretty much for his career here in a Mets uniform is A-Rod. Because he's A-Rod. He's a modern-day A-Rod. And he's going to be the poster child for everything that goes wrong with the Mets. And he probably won't get enough credit when he heats up and does his thing, unless he has a really big, big postseason moment like he had with the Yankees. Because they're going to say, well, that's what you're supposed to do when you're making $50 million a year. Is it about the money? It is, but it's also about the balance of power. He did something that he wasn't supposed to do. He wasn't supposed to say no to the Yankees. And the Mets were not supposed to muscle their way and break their yoke. That yoke was supposed to be there forever. That was a narrative that the media was going to rely on. That was a way of life. It was a story that wrote itself automatically. It made them happy. And by the way, Cohen, this outsider, in a lot of ways, I don't know if you would consider him new money. He probably is by the way he's made his money over the last 35, 40 years. But he busted himself into a good old boys club and disrupted that club. Even though the Dodgers, a private equity team, by the way, which is probably the worst type of money in the modern world, okay, have done everything and then some that Cohen has or will. But nobody talks about that because they're the Dodgers, they're LA, and they have been bestowed because they're a iconic franchise and they're a franchise that is part of the baseball club, that's it's okay for them to do that. So the Mets have to learn where they're at in this pecking order and how teams are coming for them. And I don't know if they're ready for that. I don't know if that they don't. I'm not saying they're not up for the task. I'm not saying that they won't bust through this. But this is a new type of challenge. It's not a yoke anymore. It's the burden of expectations. It's the burden of being good. It's the burden of being part of an exclusive sports club. And if the Mets want to see how a team can be treated and how poorly a team, no matter what they do, and a coach can be treated, just look at the other team in town that's starting the Eastern Conference Finals on Wednesday, the Knicks. Nobody wants to see that team win. No matter what that team does, they're going to be criticized. And they, from a media perspective, don't handle the media well. There's a lot of things that Stearns and Cohen and the Mets do that the Knicks could learn from. And I think Stearns does an excellent job with the media. I think Cohen does an excellent job with the media. But ultimately, the narratives and the storylines write themselves. And the Mets bust themselves in a club that nobody wants them at. And now Soto, every time he's on a national stage, and he'll have another chance next weekend against the Dodgers, he's going to be judged by what he does. He had did not have a great offensive weekend. And if you look at the stats, and we talked about this on Friday, the floor, he's very Brandon Nimmo-esque. His numbers are very Brandon Nimmo-esque. A lot of walks, high on base percentage, some pop. You didn't pay $50 million a year for him to be Brandon Nimmo. You paid $50 million a year for him to be Ted Williams. Just like the team across town has Mickey Mantle. And I'm not saying he won't be Ted Williams, but right now he's Brandon Nimmo. And I don't know if that's because his bat speed, there's been something written to slow down, is, you know, the burden of expectations, the adjustment, him trying to figure out now where he fits into this universe of baseball, where before he could just play baseball, now he's the offensive hub. You know, he's got two other guys around him in Alonso and Lindor that are having excellent years, but they're going to need him. That threesome is going to be gnarly for any pitcher come October, because those three guys are really tough. I mean, Pete has evolved, even though he made a really stupid error, and the throws from first base are becoming concerning, and that's a separate issue. So I think the biggest thing to take away, we went into the weekend saying it's about Soto, the Subway Series, the juice for the Subway Series coming back because of Soto. That happened. It's not vintage Subway Series, but there's juice. The Yankees fans wanted this. They haven't wanted this and taken this much glee in a series win over the Mets in a long time. I mean, for crying out loud, I turn on X this morning, and Luke freaking Voit, unless that was a fake account, which I don't think, a guy who tried out for the Mets like not too long ago is taking glee in Soto's failures. Gary Sheffield's kid is on there taking glee in Soto not hitting it, not catching a Yankee Stadium home run from Clay Bellinger. And I mean, look, that there was so many frustrating things all weekend. Alonso hits rockets. They don't go anywhere. Beatty hits a rocket. It doesn't go anywhere. Lindor, I thought, had hit the ball much better that Judge caught late in the game yesterday. And I'm just like, where, you know, man, they can't get anything going. DJ LeMahieu pokes a ball down the right field line, home run. Bellinger hits a fly ball that's an out at Citi Field, home run. That's Yankee Stadium. That's the way the ball bounces. You got to move on. You got to be better. Like Buck used to say, play better. Mets have to play better. But they have to understand now that they're not going into these series, at least for the next few years, and maybe not ever with Soto on their club. I don't want to say forever because 15 years is a long time, where they could just treat it like another three games. Because that's what it really is. But I think that the takeaway, like I said, is you are now the hunted. You're in a club that nobody wants you in. And many people are waiting for you to show that you don't belong. And that the worst thing that could happen to this organization after all the work they've done over the last 5 years, particularly since Stearns took over, is to completely show that they're incapable of being part of this club and push themselves back down. Because that's what they want you to do. Now, we're a long ways away from that. And it doesn't mean that everything has to go perfect. And by no means throughout the season, and the Mets are 500 during the month of May, and you're going to have stretches like this, especially as you play, and this is not even the toughest schedule. The schedule gets much tougher in June. You're going to play 500 ball. I mean, even a 100-win Met team in 1988 played 500 baseball over the course of like 80 games that year. So even the best teams go through these ruts. It's how you learn from it and how you come away with it. And I think we learned that, yes, the Subway Series is now the Soto Series. But we also saw that the Mets may not completely, I don't want to say be ready, have not processed where they are as an organization and where they are as a team, because the moment got big and the Mets kind of treated it, It's another game. We lost a game on the road. Eh, move on to the next. I don't think they matched. They didn't execute, but the level of intensity and who wanted this series more was clearly on the other side of the field. And I don't think that's a character flaw of the team. I think that that's as you develop and you get to know a team, and as you go through the process of a season, a team has to develop and build into who they are. The 2024 Mets, the OMG Mets, didn't start 2024 where they ended. And I don't think 2025 will be the same team now that we see in October. And now they have to take a learning away from this. You know, they went into these games last year, and maybe they caught the Yankees not at their best, but clearly they went in and they decked the Yankees. Maybe they took the Yankees by surprise. That's not happening anymore. And the Mets have to understand that. Now, as far as, you know, the baseball part, like I said, up, you know, outside of McGill and McGill's stinker during the, you know, the backdrop of the Nick game on Friday, Saturday and Sunday, up until the eighth inning on Sunday, were great ball games, good pitching, good defense. I thought Saturday is going to go down as a classic, not because the Mets won, because I would have said the same thing if Judge hit a home run and the Yankees came back. It would have been a classic. I think one of the biggest positives of the weekend is Diaz, and I think if Diaz has found something mechanically that has clicked, that brings him anywhere near 90%, 95% to what we saw in 2022, then not only do the Mets, I think, now need it, it is a huge weapon to be automatic in the ninth inning. What Diaz did on Saturday is maybe bring back a little bit of that invincibility. I felt, and I saw him pitch on, you know, sit behind the plate on Tuesday night, and I thought he was okay. He got a little bit undone by his defense. It was a tough play by Lindor, but still the walks, the pinpoint command and control that we saw in 2022, that has eluded him. Is it because he can't use sticky stuff? Is it because of the injury? He seems to think it's mechanics. You know, I got to trust him. It's his body. He's the expert on pitching. You know, I've started to see some aspects of it, but not to the level we saw on Saturday. He made the big pitches when he needed to, and he got it up to triple digits. So to me, it's not just him striking out Judge. It's the way he struck out Judge. And by the way, the Mets, give them credit. I mean, they almost got out of that inning. I mean, Cabrera versus Judge, I was like, this is done. I mean, it wasn't Cabrera. It was the lefty that wound up doing the Mets in, the lefty-on-lefty matchup. So, especially in a bullpen that doesn't have Minter. Minter was such a key part of building up that bullpen. An experienced, really top-notch arm that could also potentially close, that has pitched in big ball games, has won a championship. Not having him around is a big blow. Diaz reverting to some version of the form, huge, 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 huge. Because ultimately, like I always say, and this Mets team is no different, but I think they may, even more so than last year's team, be impacted by their bullpen even more. No matter what goes on with Soto and the offense and even Diaz, if Diaz is right, games are going to be won and lost in the 7th, 8th, and 9th inning. And right now, I think you could count on the Mets starters giving you 6 really good innings. Peterson, even when he lost it, he was able to battle through it. The Mets, between Griffin Canning and Peterson and Holmes and Senga, and I know McGill had a bad outing, but let's see, before we start throwing him off the island, McGill might be regressing to the mean of who he really is. I think right now, and you haven't even gotten Manaea and Montas into the mix here, I think right now you can really feel good about the first 6 innings of the ballgame. The Mets are against top offensive teams, the Cubs and the Yankees, for the most part, outside of the McGill starts, shut those teams down. Now, you have Diaz at the end. We got a really good report in a big spot in a big series about Diaz. It's the 6 to 9 outs in between that I'm worried about. Now, Oscar Brazenbaum, did Volpe help him yesterday? Yes, but he came through and pitched well on Saturday afternoon. Let's see how he continues to do back-to-back. You know, even though he's got an ERA under 1, he may be a little bit over-indexed. You know, his FIP and his expected ERA is a little bit higher, but he's getting the job done. He's getting about a strikeout per inning. He's keeping the walks down short of yesterday. you know, he's the kind of guy that, you know, when he throws the, when he throws that changeup, sometimes you worry, you know, eventually they're gonna smack him around. And he's blown a couple of saves. I think one was not really his fault recently against the Pirates. His defense failed him. But as you look at the rest of the bullpen, I mean, Brazenban, you know, here in the circle of faith, you know, let's see where he morphs into. But, I mean, everybody else is a real wild card. I mean, Stanek, I know, is having a pretty good year, but he's a guy that, you know, throws straight and has been somewhat inconsistent. His walks are a little high. I know that, you know, maybe he, unlike Brazenban, is be underperforming versus what his expected ERA is. So you want to say that you could trust him. I'm not so sure I could trust Stanek consistently. That's a straight fastball. And he got himself into a little bit of trouble last night, falling behind. He couldn't put hitters away. The error by Alonso did him in, even though, you know, there's not much you can do there. I mean, he got the ground ball that he needed to get the out. But you can't pitch Brazenbone and Stanek every night. You want to put Stanek and say you feel good about a Stanek, Brazenbone, Diaz, nine outs. Yeah, I could feel pretty good. I feel better, you know, if Stanek was more in the sixth inning and maybe even, you know, Brazenbone's sixth, seventh inning. And I think the Mets are missing that eighth inning second closer guy right now that I thought they had with Minter. Water under the bridge. Injuries are part of this equation. But Reed Garrett, you know, who I had as a breakout candidate, who has completely lost the strike zone the last couple of weeks. You know, is this temporary? Like when Stanek went through his issues in D.C. a couple of weeks ago, I think Max Kranick and Jose Buto are innings guys that you could count on with maybe keeping the game somewhat close or eating innings when they're behind or come in and eat innings when they're a little bit ahead and there's some margin of error. I don't know if either are high leverage. Buto I've wavered on because you've seen him be high leverage in the past, but I think the walks are too high. And then the rest of the bullpen, the Cabreras, you know, the Hergerts, the Davinskys, the Warrens, the Adcocks, the guys that are going to kind of, you know, they got this guy they got from Arizona that's having an awful year. They just plucked off the scrap heap in Martinez. I mean, we'll see where that goes. You know, we haven't seen him pitch, but, I mean, he was on the scrap heap for a reason. I'm sorry, Castillo, not Martinez, Castillo. I mean, the Mets right now have a bridge that may need some work. Does need some work. And they're probably going to have to go out. I mean, we saw, you know, Stearns do it. And I don't know if they have time to wait till August 1st or the trade deadline of 31st. They may need to start doing what they did last year with Stanek and Maton and start to look, you know, who's out there. I don't know. You know, the Orioles have, you know, the Orioles ready to start ripping this thing apart. You know, is there something going on now? They fired their manager. Are they looking to rip this thing apart? Can you look to Baltimore and see what they have? I'm just, you know, I'm not coming here with proposals. I'm just giving you where the Mets are at because, to me, that's the soft underbelly right now. The offense, I know it's annoying. There's the brownouts. I mean, they're facing some pretty good pitching. I mean, Loaisiga was really good yesterday. I mean, Fried is, you know, has always given the Mets fits. I thought Clark Schmidt got lucky with both the Beatty hard hit balls and some of the rockets the Mets hit on Saturday. I think, you know, Schmidt could have gotten his doors blown off and the Mets just got unlucky. Even Soto with the that wasn't Schmidt. That was the bullpen with the ball up the middle late. That could have been a much, you know, bigger cushion there. You know, McGill, once he takes you out of the game on Friday, I mean, you know, any decent pitcher can navigate with a multi-run lead. And, you know, even against the Pirates this week, you know, Skeens and Keller. I mean, these are tough, you know, tough pitchers. I mean, I was behind the plate for Keller. Ball had a lot of movement. As much as Senga had the ghost fork going, Keller had his own movement and spin going on. So I think, you know, the offense, unless you're convinced that Soto's done, I think the offense will be okay. Here's where I think the offense might be problematic and where you see more of the brownouts. You have your three big hitters. And Soto needs to join that Alonso Lindor party. Your surrounding very good hitters, which I think Nimmo has gone from a core elite hitter to, I think, his new version, maybe because it's health and decline and or maybe his different approach. He's a very good hitter. McNeil's a very good hitter. But the real question to me is Vientos. Is Vientos a core middle-of-the-lineup hitter that you could count on that could hit all types of pitching? Or is he more of a seventh hitter that's going to struggle against elite pitchers and feast off of mediocrity? Now, a lot of people, when I brought this up on X, said, well, look at the postseason last year. Remember something. Baseball's a game of adjustments. They have a book on him now. Yeah, he went through the league a couple of times last year, but he also was at the playoffs where a lot of other teams were watching. If you don't think they're finding ways to expose holes in the guy's game, I got another thing coming for you. So he's going to have to adjust. And, I mean, look, against Cruz on Saturday, I didn't have faith that he can, get the job done. Against some big arms that the Yankees had coming out of their bullpen, I didn't really have faith. I didn't think that he can, you know, when they're not throwing those fastballs in his happy zone, I'm not so sure he can lay off the breaking stuff. I'm not so sure he hasn't shown this year that he could adjust and be a more complete hitter. And that'll be something to watch. And then as far as the bottom of the lineup, and I'll put Alvarez in there. You know, Alvarez and Torrens, to me, I mean, maybe Alvarez should be in that same conversation with Vientos. They're the same player. Luis Torrens is a catcher, a defense-first catcher that has some pop, but you're not going to rely on consistent offense. He's going to be about a 700 OPS, maybe league average, slightly below league average offensive player. I mean, that's what Alvarez is. Alvarez has not shown me that he has evolved as a hitter one iota. And am I at a point to say that he don't have it? I'm not here to say that. But I'm not so sure Alvarez is a star. I think he's a good defensive catcher. He's got a good framing. He's got a good arm. Not so sure he can block balls in the dirt. But he is not a core offensive player. And at the age of 23, he's still very young and can evolve and develop. But let's call it like it is right now. And then you have a component player in Taylor. So you've got the core three. You got to really hope that Vientos joins the middle tier of McNeil and Nimmo and becomes a supporting, very good player. And then you have your component guys. Cunha right now is a component guy with a glove. Alvarez is a component catcher. And then you have Taylor, the center fielder who's there to catch the ball. And, you know, you get whatever you get out of him with the bat is gravy. So that's where you have the brownouts. You know, you could go through. If the middle part, the very good players, the Vientos, the Nimmos, guys like that, McNeil when he's in the lineup, don't hit, you're basically relying on the three big guys. And right now Soto's going through an avalanche of media attention. So that's where you're at, you know, that's where, but I just think that'll work itself out. The bullpen bridge, that's an issue. And until the offense becomes a bully offense and everything clicks, you're going to have to win. They've played a ton of one-run games, and most of the one-run games right now, to date, have been lost on the offense. Some of it's bad luck, some of it's the variability of baseball. But now you're seeing, because the bullpen, and I don't know if part of the struggles here with Garrett and, you know, Stanek's inconsistencies and what have you, has been the amount of use they've had since opening day because the starters were starting to creep into the sixth. And I'm not so sure that they're effective creeping much into the seventh as you get third time, 100-plus pitches. I mean, Peterson got over 100 pitches. Looks like he's one of the few that can get there and still stay in the mix. So you're going to need those outs for the bullpen. And right now I'm not so sure that I could rely on anybody outside of Diaz. I mean, maybe Brazenbaum. I mean, he showed a lot yesterday. But he's also blown some saves. So, from a baseball perspective, there's things to worry about, mainly the bullpen. We're not yet, I know everyone's going to talk about Soto in the offense and 9-1-1. That's not the story here. The fact that the Mets now have to adjust to the opposition coming for them, maybe that's more of the story. And then, of course, there's what we saw to Diaz, a big, big positive. If there's one thing to take away positive this weekend, it was Diaz. Now, is that the Subway Series adrenaline, and can he replicate that against the Rockies a week from now? I guess we have to see. Or the White Sox a week from now, I guess we have to see. But that's the big takeaway. But ultimately, the Mets, just look across town. Look at how the Knicks are treated. Look at how they're scrutinized. Look at how they're covered. That's how you're going to be covered. And it ain't going to change. They don't want you at the table. They don't really like the fact that you upset the balance of power. And Soto, you're a story all year. Even if it levels and he starts to really show the Soto of old, come postseason, they're going to show highlight after highlight of his home run against Cleveland. Anything he does that doesn't match the drama and the level of greatness that he showed last October with the Yankees is going to be pale in comparison. It is a very high bar. But when you hit like Ted Williams and you put yourself among the best of the best in the history of the sport and you get the largest contract ever, and the way that your free agency was covered like a reality series, this is bill that comes due. And there's nothing you could do about it. You're here. The Mets are here. Soto's here. You can't go back. You pushed yourself here. You asked for this. You wanted this. Now it's here. Now you have to embrace it. You know what? Next Sunday, next weekend, is it three games in reality to stand against the Dodgers? Yes. But you don't think the Dodgers want to come in and show you that, hey, guys, I know you want to be us. I know you want to play and beat us and look at us head-to-head. We ripped you apart last October. Let's see if you're any better. They're going to bring it at Citi Field. Let's see what the Mets do. So on to Fenway Park. You got to put the Subway Series in the closet. There'll be another opportunity later in the season. Of course, you have some games in between. Got to continue the road trip. You know, really important. Mets continue to play 500 on the road. Much better home team. Got to start winning some series here on the road. Let's see what they could do in Fenway Park. The Red Sox haven't exactly had the season that they want. And away you go. So we'll see as we continue this journey. And look, we're almost at that point where we could really start to, and I did a little bit of that this morning, look at this team, put the getting to know you phase into the back burner and say, okay, this is what this team needs as they get that second third of the season, which is going to be a tough one. June's a tough schedule. I mean, fortunately, the Mets have a ton of home games this month. Maybe they could build themselves a little bit of a cushion. But June is going to be a really interesting month for this club. It's a tough month. So, you know, buckle up. It's only going to get harder. And that's when you're at that point where we'll kind of know what this team needs. I think we're starting to see it. You know, how will Stearns address it? You know, and how quickly will he address, especially the bridge and the bullpen? And the real thing about the bullpen I didn't even get into is how disappointing Deadniel Nunez is. The fact that he's a complete mess right now. That would be the guy that with Minter going down that I counted on sliding in. And I don't know what you could, I don't know if he's someone, you know, post, you know, whatever he had the nerve issue last year. I don't know if there's any way you can count him. I don't know if his command issues are related to, you know, health, related to, you know, mechanics, obviously. You know, the mechanics part of health, is it because it's part of some kind of mental issue? You know, we'll see. So that's where we're at. That's kind of the post-Subway Series learning state of the union. We got to learn a lot, as we always do during the getting to know you phase, about the Mets this weekend. Now they got to address it and correct it. Will they? That's why we sit back and watch the games. We'll find out. All right, everybody. That's it for this morning. Get to work. Get your week started. Of course, you can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at TalkingMetsNoG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com, NoG, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG, and I'd love for you to subscribe to the newsletter, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks on Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy your week ahead. Holiday weekend coming up. Let's have some fun this week. Mets in Fenway. Big Dodgers series. Lots of baseball. We'll be back with another Talking Mets podcast later this week. Till then, take care, everybody.